This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Fermin Vincent Valenzuela, Vincent Ramos, Melissa Ventura, Anthony Nunez, Pedro Villanueva, and Raul Saavedra Vargas are names we have not heard very much in the media. Well, they are all Latinos who have died over the course of just days recently, and they've all died at the hands of police officers. The Black Lives Matter movement has brought the issue of African Americans killed by police to the forefront, and the videotaped deaths of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile have drawn thousands of people out onto the streets to march. But while police do target blacks more disproportionately than any other racial group, the problem of police violence is broad. This year alone, after African Americans, Native Americans are killed at almost as high a rate. Latinos are killed at a rate of just about half that of blacks, making them the third most vulnerable community. My guest is Juan Cartagena. He is the president and general counsel with the group Latino Justice, and he just wrote an article in the Huffington Post called Populous, Multiracial and Ignored, Latinos and Police Shootings. Welcome to the program, Juan.
Thank you, Sonali. Thank you for having me.
So part of the complication when it comes to Latinos and police violence is that, first of all, Latinos are a very racially diverse group. There are white Latinos, there are black Latinos, there are brown Latinos, there are Latinos who are victims of police violence, and there are Latinos who are among the perpetrators of police violence as well. Does that complicate this conversation?
By all means, by all means. It's something that we have to remind America about almost every day. The country is still in a black and white binary. In fact, especially when it comes to law enforcement, Sonali, everything from arrest, who gets arrested, what are the statistics on who gets in prison in state prisons. There are 11 states in the country that don't even report out how many Latinos they've imprisoned or how many Latinos get arrested, because they still only report in black and white. So yes, this is something that very much complicates the conversation, but it's a conversation we have to have.
So how do we view this issue? And I want to make it really clear. I think it's a mistake for us to sort of say Latino lives matter too, because the work that the Black Lives Matter movement has done to bring the issue of black Americans being killed by the police stands on its own. And I think there have been some mistaken attempts to try to appropriate the same language to point out that other people are killed as well. Of course, Black Lives Matter never maintain that they're the only ones getting killed, but they are. Black people are getting killed at the highest rate of any ethnic and racial group. So how do we tackle this issue then?
Well, we definitely have to tackle it from the perspective you just laid out, Sonali. Let's be real. Latinos are black too. That's why Black Lives Matter to Latinos.
Plenty of Afro-Latinos.
So many Afro-Latinos. And it only stands to reason. Remember, the Africans that were enslaved and brought to this part of the world, in large part, went to Latin American, Central American, and Caribbean countries. By far, like only about 5% were brought to the United States proper. So as a result, you have to talk about this from a term of an Afro-Latino perspective. By all means, we support the Black Lives Matter movement here at Latino Justice, because it is at the pinnacle of some of the best reforms that we can talk about in this area of law enforcement and criminal justice reform. If we were to achieve a lot of what BLM is asking for, it will go a long way to also solving the problems for Latinos. It will not solve 100% of the problems for Latinos, because they're profiled in different ways and they're very significant issues that Latinos face. But by all means, we have to support BLM, because they're at the pinnacle of reform and making sure people hear about it.
Now, the Latinos that I mentioned, who I named as having been killed by police just in recent days, are there any common threads there? For example, are they immigrants? Are most of them low-income Latinos? Are they clustered within urban centers? What patterns can we draw from the kinds of Latinos, if you will, that are vulnerable to police violence?
There are some patterns there, but in this particular, those five names that you just mentioned, and thank you so much for mentioning their names, first of all, Samantha, that's very important to us. There are some patterns, but some of them are very young and some of them are native born. And that's another thing we have to break the myth of. The far majority of Latinos in the United States are not born outside the United States. They're born in the United States. We are a very, very young community. We have the lowest median age of any other group in this country. So what we're talking about are complex issues that have to do with how police treat Latinos, regardless of their immigration status. Now, it just so happens that when these events do occur within communities that have high numbers of non-citizen Latinos, some of whom may also be undocumented, it does raise the complexity of how do we ensure that witnesses feel that they can participate and call out the police for what they saw in a way that allows them the comfort of knowing that if they do so, they will not be retaliated against by being deported. Those are very complex issues. In my office, we deal with police litigation all the time. We sue police departments. And having the cooperation of Latino plaintiffs or people who have been wronged is a significant issue for us. We also ask for U visas, which are very special visas which have a relief for deportation for people who are witnesses to crime. But there aren't that many U visas left in the country, and it's always a big struggle.
So Latinos targeted by police is often where the issue of police violence and immigration, people's vulnerability to immigration authorities intersect, right?
Definitely. It's those intersections, but it's also the intersection that happens with the rest of urban America. I mean, it's the intersection that happened with individuals who are presumed or stereotyped because they are looked at as a group of people, young Latinos, juvenile Latinos, as a group that may be involved in some form of criminality. And when you look at it from that perspective, it's the same racial profiling that is the worst parts of policing in the African American community as well.
One of the instances that I think of when I think of the complexity of people of color in general being killed by police is Eric Garner's killing in New York, that and how his altercation with the police and their his killing basically was videotaped by a Latino man who has spoken out and understood the importance of documenting such things. And only then to, of course, be persecuted himself, accused of crimes. How important is it for there to be common cause between Latinos, between African Americans, and people of color in general? And by the way, of course, whites are killed by police as well, as we saw in the case of Dylan Noble in Fresno, California. For us to understand that police violence is racialized, but there needs to be cross-racial solidarity in fighting it.
There's no question. The young man who you just referenced in Staten Island, yes, he's being, right now, he's taking a plea because they've been harassing him ever since. Walter Scott, the black man who was killed running away from a police officer in the Carolinas, that was videotaped by a Dominican man, and he couldn't sleep. He just, I had to tell the world, I had to show the world what I saw and filmed on my camera. So Nali, we are at a point now that we know these issues are very, very complex. We know that just because somebody is caught on videotape and has a badge and is committing a crime doesn't mean that that person will be even prosecuted in some jurisdictions, let alone convicted in jail. These are significant issues that have been with us for decades now. This is not new for us. What's new is that we have the technology capable of recording it. But these are entrenched issues. So if my point to you and your listeners, of course Latinos have to be arm in arm with African Americans and progressive whites, all of us who want to make sure that policing is done in a better way in America, that the court systems are and the district attorneys are much more transparent, that there's special prosecutors that take this load off of regular district attorneys who have a conflict of interest of prosecuting their own arm, the law enforcement arm that they depend upon every day in court. We are looking for ways of dealing with very hard, complex issues that have been with us for a long time. And this dial will only change, it will only be moved if we do it together.
Now, in many ways, it seems as though the way in which police cast violence against Latinos, incidents where Latinos end up dead after being accosted by police, is to criminalize them posthumously. That is also a very common theme with African Americans who are killed at the hands of cops. And in the names that I mentioned, the five or six names that I mentioned earlier, the cases that we've just, it seems as though there's a spike at least when there's such a large number in such a short period of time. Do you think that that was done where basically, oh, this person was armed with a knife, so we had to kill them with a gun?
Oh yes. And that's a sad state, a sad commentary about how well effective policing has, how it is today. I mean, If a woman, Melissa Ventura, allegedly had a knife and she's surrounded by three or four police officers, each with a gun, how is that a significant threat that she needs to be shot dead?
This is a
See, there's
mother of three.
a mother of three. I mean, we are talking about what is the way in which police officers have been trained. You know, we and this is the president mentioned this, you know, we do put a lot on the shoulders of police officers, many of whom are very young when they come out of the academy. They're expected to do quite a number of things, not the least of which is to respond in split seconds to what is could very well be a dangerous event. But at what level do we have to teach and reteach to de-escalate the situation? I mean, this is not about macho pride anymore. It can't be about that anymore. We have too many lives that have been lost at the hands of police who then make the mistake or then realize, oh, the person wasn't armed. That was a cursing that you heard in Baton Rouge. That was the oh moment in Minnesota. I mean, that was like, oh, wow, they really weren't armed. So at one point, we had to teach de-escalation so that we are ready and able to calm situations down and look for more resources and protect lives. That's at the ultimate end, our faith in both law enforcement and equally, Sonali, in the district attorneys and the courts that follow these events, our faith in all three arms of those governments is only going to be lessened if
Right.
we get any justice.
And you know, some people say that police violence is the result of there being so many guns in our society, that because there are so many Americans that are armed, police have to be armed. But for example, as we were saying in the case of Melissa Ventura, you can take all the guns away, but if cops still have guns, a knife-wielding woman is seen as so much of a threat that she is just killed. Let's talk about what needs to happen. Do you feel that non-Black Latinos in particular could see the Black Lives Matter movement as a model, as an inspiration to also organize for this issue, to also organize against police violence? In your article in the Huffington Post, you call out the Latino church, for example, as just not doing enough.
Oh, no question. You know, and that's because, you know, Catholicism is really, really prevalent throughout all of Central Latin America and the Latino parts of the Caribbean. And that's been so for centuries. Protestantism has also gone up quite a bit, but that's another Christian arm. So we're all talking about how is it that churches can play a role. And when you compare the role of the Black church in the United States with the role of the Catholic Church for Latinos, and I know these are apples to oranges, so I don't pretend that I'm making complete comparisons, but at least to a level when people go on Sunday to their temples and churches and congregations for spiritual healing, the Catholic Church has to have a better way to respond to these social justice issues that are not just talk about poverty at all, but talk about how poverty for all of us who are poor are actually in feeding into this notion that we are less than. And once the police officers think you're other and less than equal, they can treat you the way we are being treated today. So
And
my
our
point is that the Catholic Church has to do a lot more in this regard.
And do you think that non-Black Latinos also fall prey to this idea that police violence is a Black issue, immigration is a Latino issue?
Sure, but that's a lot because, you know, we haven't had a chance to talk about this yet on your program. I'm sure not about it now. We may not have enough time to finish it,
Yes, let's talk about it. Let's do it.
but that's because, you know, the issues of racism exist in Latin America too. I mean, let's face it. You turn on any, turn on Univision, Telemundo. Look at the characters that are on the most popular novelas. Look at the anchors who are
They're
giving
all
you the news.
white.
Of course, being Afro-Latino in Puerto Rico, or in Cuba, or in Colombia, or in Mexico, is not an easy thing to do. So these issues are with us too. We have to break down these same walls within our own communities, while at the same time recognizing that when we come to this country, we're treated as one lump set of other people. We can't be American because somehow we don't look American. Can't be American because we speak with an accent, or we don't even speak English at all. And we can't be American because we just look different, act different. And that's the notion of this whole notion about why the country's going through the demographic, you know, change that is scaring the, you know, the everything out of, you know, an older white male cohort. And that's what change is doing. It's this last gasp of people who think that they're losing the soul of America to a horde of invaders.
Right.
When it comes to Latinos, you know, a lot of us weren't invading anything. You know, the border crossed all of Southwest, not they crossed that border. So that's a very, very interesting dynamic to talk about. But you hit the nail on the head before. Would it be possible? Is it true that that many parts of the Latino community see this as we're involved in immigration, that's all we care about, and policing abuse is only a black issue? Of course.
Yeah.
My point to you and to your listeners is that for many of us Latinos, and the bulk of us are born here, and the bulk of us are also living in urban America, those of us who live in these spaces, we share the same conditions, the same challenges as the African American community in much of urban America. And we have seen these same levels of oppression affect us equally. That's why we're in solidarity with everybody who's concerned about policing in urban America.
Hmm. And even though the levels of violence are lower than, I mean, about half the rate, at least this year alone, in terms of Latino Americans killed by police compared to African Americans killed by police, it's still significant.
Sure. Yeah. If it wasn't for the fact that this country treats black people so badly when it comes to law enforcement and criminal justice, we'd be talking about this every day.
Yeah.
Because the salience is only dwarfed by how it treats African Americans. But this is a significant issue. You know, there's data, there's a report that just came out about the San Francisco Police Department detaining people and how, you know, contraband or drugs or anything else is fine. Actually found that higher proportions for whites were detained than blacks or Latinos in San Francisco. That same pattern existed in New York and Stop and Frisk. So you're looking at communities that are being detained excessively and disproportionately when the data definitely shows that it's the opposite. So we see that. Our youth see that every day. And that's what's corroding the youth and their sense of the legitimacy of government when they see these things every day and nobody's doing anything about it.
Well, Juan, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Is there a website where people can find out more information about the work you do at Latino Justice?
Of course, the www.latinojustice.org. My Twitter handle is @LJCartagena. Please give me a tweet, give me information, share information with me. We are very, very interested in pushing this off, these commentaries, this analysis to people in Washington. You see it elsewhere. This is a long struggle. And we can use the help of all your listeners and all your readers who are right now, listen to us right now, to recognize that this is an issue that affects all of us.
Thank you so much. We'll post a link to that website from our site later today. Juan Cartagena is the president and general counsel of Latino Justice. And he just wrote an article in the Huffington Post called "Populist, Multiracial and Ignored Latinos and Police Shootings." We'll post a link to that article as well. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.